I'm joined by Amnesty's Neil Sammons, who's been looking at what's been going on in Homs in the last 72 hours. Neil, the video footage from the city yesterday was particularly grisly. What have your witnesses been telling you?
Yes, well, until now we don't have any direct witnesses to the actual killings of the bodies who were then left in, it appears, Al-Zahra, a generally pro-regime neighbourhood of Homs, mostly Alawi there of the sect of the regime. But it seems that, yes, that 34 bodies were left there. Some say that actually they were killed on the spot, but most are saying that no, the people were detained over the previous few days, in which the already intense crackdown on the city of Homs had been heightened, and many people were taken from different areas of the city and were then dropped into basically the street in this area. We've got the names of 15 of the people, and it seems until now that all of them are Sunni. Some have said that all the bodies are Sunni, but that seems unrealistic at the moment, that if they haven't all been identified, I don't think that's clear. And if it does have any kind of sectarian context to it, that's not really clear yet either. It may have almost been kind of by chance that they were there, or just they were left in a place more favourable to the regime.
But there were reports that up to 27 Alawites had been killed just previously in Homs.
Yes, we've heard that from until now only one source, and we haven't been able to corroborate that from others. So while we've been checking, including from people who are more sympathetic to the regime, we haven't managed to ascertain whether that's correct. Although it may well be, it's a particularly dark period in Homs, and it's hard to get information from all the different parts of the city.
Do we know how they died? The 34.
Well, from the videos, I mean, for sure, some have been. It looks like they were kind of stabbed to death. One clearly has had his neck slit, and a number of the reports say that that all of them had their hands tied as well. So they may well have been taken away by the security forces, or at least the Shabiha, the kind of pro-regime militia thugs, who then killed them in detention. It's just sources coming with different information, but one has suggested that they were actually driven over by cars. But whether that was before or after they were dead is also unclear.
Does what you've been finding out point to a new phase in what's happening in Syria?
Well, as you mentioned, the last few days in Homs, that there's been a greater level of military activity. The intensity of the shooting and shelling has said to have gone up. A number of mosques, with Sunni imams apparently in all of them, not actually at the time, but more to the Sunni faith, had been hit, apparently. So in that city, at least, it appears to have got worse, and there are a lot more reports coming in of even more brutal abuses taking place, more reports of rapes and so on, and more sexual violence as well, more kidnappings, including a couple of young women who worked in a shop were apparently taken away the day before yesterday also. I mean, it seems to be getting more personal. It's not only opposition versus regime, but it's kind of seeping down the layers of the society as well, more kind of revenge attacks and so on.
The Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has been giving this interview to ABC News, in which he's denied that security forces were given any orders to kill or enact in a brutal way. What did you make of the interview?
Yes, it's curious. He's only saying that, as far as I'm aware, to ABC, and he said similar to Western media about how he has told the army not to fire a bullet, and yet it's been clear for 8.5 months that the security forces, including the army, have been shooting all over the place, left, right and centre, at peaceful protesters and people at funerals and so on. So, I mean, there's no real logic to what he's saying. I mean, he is the supreme commander of the Syrian armed forces. I mean, that's his title. Article 103 of the Syrian constitution makes that clear. If he had been telling them not to shoot, then you would have expected him to have been saying so very clearly in Syria, where he is actually, to an extent, quite... he's not such a prominent person in the media. He's been fairly quiet recently, but he should be declaring in front of the people and the armed forces that you should not be shooting at them, that we will investigate any abuses, that people who have been, you know, who are suspected of killing people should be investigated and brought to justice, and so on, and setting up mechanisms to rid the country of its sweeping immunity clauses for abuses committed by the security forces. He's not doing any of that. So, I mean, one other aspect to it, of course, is whether he's looking for his own kind of wiggle room. So, on a diplomatic level, as far as I understand, both the EU and the Arab Leagues, their sanctions list against senior members of the regime, assets freeze and other, you know, travel bans and so on, until now exclude the name of Bashar al-Assad, or they do have his brother Maher and other people close to him. You know, perhaps he's trying to distance himself to, you know, seek to get out of being prosecuted or to find some safe haven to get to in the future. But, I mean, without seeing the full interview, I don't think it's all been broadcast yet. It's hard to say if there's more to it.
By claiming that he doesn't control the army, is that what you mean?
Yes, although, I mean, it doesn't really make sense. I mean, under domestic Syrian law, as we said, I mean, he is responsible for it. Under international law, he's also responsible. I mean, he's individually and criminally responsible for the act of the armed forces. And if he's pretending that he didn't know, I mean, that's simply not good enough. If he didn't know, one, that's impossible, you know, because there's just multiple sources of information saying that crimes against humanity are being committed. That's from the UN, the Human Rights Council, you know, leading human rights organizations, journalists who've been into the country, the few that have been there. Al Jazeera, if ever he turns out on another media and so on. Of course, he's a technical man. He used to be a computer expert. He studied in the UK. He's not a man who's just lived in a box for 40 years, like, you know, in a sense, some people in his country have. So he can't even really plead legally that he's been unable to know, because clearly he has. So even by omission, he is still responsible.
Is there a worrying implication to what he's saying? It suggests that maybe the army's out of control.
Yes, I mean, it's true. I mean, and you know, by talking about the army, it's not, although he was, I mean, it's the army and the security forces to an extent. It's the military and intelligence agencies, security forces, Shabiha, who have been carrying out heaps of the abuses, not only the army. But, I mean, there's been a sense for a while, I mean, that the kind of Syria watchers have never been too clear how strong a control Bashar al-Assad does really have as president of the regime, and that, you know, he came into the position, you know, fairly young, fairly inexperienced, and perhaps has never been able to really kind of state his authority over it. But, you know, that's his lot. He should have been able to do that. He's had enough time. It's people close to him personally, through family and business and so on, who do kind of control the commanding heights of the economy and also of the security forces. But, you know, as we said, it's his responsibility to ensure that these things don't happen. And the regime is clearly responsible for the most horrendous abuses, and he's the president, he's the head of the armed forces. He has to, hopefully, I hope, pay the price for it.
Okay, Neil, thanks very much.
Thank you, Matt. Take care.